probably many New Yorkers, I was going to say every, but many New Yorkers have the ultimate Florida experience. Florida has a reputation. I guess that's what happened to me. I can tell you, just because you take to devotional service doesn't mean that the miseries of the material world will not afflict you. They will. As long as you have a material body, you will have to experience adidaivik, adibhautik, and adhyatmik klesha. So why should I become a devotee? Because you will learn how to tolerate matra sparsha stukonte asitoshna sukha dukkha da agama paino nityastam statikshasva bharata. Right in the beginning, Lord Krishna tells Arjuna, before the battle, before anything, Arjuna's disturbed. Krishna tells him, winter and summer seasons come and go, and they have their own affliction or misery. Happiness and distress come and go. Kalena sarvatra gambira ranghasa. In time, happiness and distress, you get both ends of the stick. You pick up a stick, you get both ends. You pick up both ends. As long as we're attached to the relative material body, the relative material world, we will have to experience happiness and distress. The devotee can tolerate them. He can tolerate them and keep his mind equipoised. He can keep his mind focused on spiritual life, because we're only here for a short time. A friend of mine just wrote to me, not a devotee, but he knew a little Latin. So the famous Latin expression is tempus fugit. So he said, I don't know if my Latin's correct, because it was 40 years ago. And I remembered, yes, time flies, tempus fugit. Time flies away very quickly. And we have to give up the body. So at least while we're here for a short period, we should take advantage of the opportunity we have to get the most enlightenment out of life, the best education we can, so that at the time of death we can remember Krishna. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajati ante kalevaram. According to how your mind is fixed at the time of death, you're going to have that consciousness and you will achieve that destination. Most people die in a state of confusion, anarchy, bewilderment, fear, attachment. We were all horrified and shocked. I'm sure it's been discussed umpteen times, many times. The World Trade Center. I wasn't here. I saw it on television. I saw both the buildings come crashing down. All those people who died, what was their state of consciousness? Where did they go? They had to die, whether it was in the World Trade Center or some other trade center. We all have to give up this mortal frame. You can't keep it! I'm sorry, I don't care how many insurance policies you have. You have to give up your body eventually. As Mr. Hendricks, who is from my hometown, Vancouver, Seattle, castles made of sand slide into the sea eventually. Mr. Hendricks' contribution to spiritual enlightenment. It's true. Everything that we're doing now, they're like castles made of sand. And they're going to slide into the Atlantic Ocean eventually. So, anyway, it just my experience there in Florida is just another thing. And Krishna is so kind. Okay, there was distress. Like Ram Bhadra said, the greatest distress was that Nrisimhadev, he left. And that really tortured me, and I talked to different devotees, and they said it happens. And there are many other examples of devotees who lost their deities. Mayapur, they lost deities, were stolen. To Jagannath Puri, deities were stolen. Why it happens, hard to say. Krishna decides to go somewhere else. I met one Spanish-speaking devotee. I don't know if she was Mexican, but they went to Mexico, and they were staying in a hotel there. It was a cheap hotel, and they're like, oh my God, we've got to get out of here. Noise all night, and all kinds of raucous activities were going on. We got to get out of here. They went to the proprietor. We're leaving. No, 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 please stay. You have to, no, no, no. There's one very big saint. He's coming tomorrow. You must meet him. Hotel aside, you must meet this big saint. Very famous, very powerful. All right, they were convinced. They stayed. The next morning, this guy came, and he had some kind of following. People were coming from the town to meet him also. And along with him, his servants were carrying some, like, palanquin, and they couldn't see what was inside of it. It was all decorated with flowers, and people were offering worship. So they went around to the front to look at it, and there was Lagdu Gopal, the little small deity of Lagdu Gopal. See? What happened? How do you know about Lagdu Gopal in this little, you know, small Mexican town? What do they know about Vedic culture? What do they know about Gopal? What to speak of Lagdu Gopal deity? He said, oh, I found him. He was just lying there in the sand. I found him. And he's very powerful. He has some magic. People were worshiping. So Krishna has his way of finding him, traveling into the lives of different people. But it was devastating, nonetheless. But the point in all this is that miseries afflict. I'm sure some of you have seen me in a worse condition before. Well, I'm doing a little better now, thanks to the prayers of the devotees. I still have a ways to go, but it's just one test after another. I think I'm finished with, I got this one conquered, I'm okay. Bam, I hit another brick wall. You know? Really, it's just one brick wall after another. But you have to keep going, because on the other side, there's eternal life. You have to keep going. In spiritual life, Krishna wants to know what you want. You want me, or do you want Maya? As they say in the Bible, you can't have God and Mammon. Mammon meaning Maya, the material. I guess that's a Hebrew word. Or Aramaic, I don't know. Mammon. You can't have both at the same time. So Krishna tempers you like steel is tempered by putting in fire. Krishna is so kind that he puts you in situations where you'll be forced to surrender. Just like Srila Prabhupada, there is our example. Krishna took everything away. And while Prabhupada was wondering why this was happening to him, he was basically a devotee of Krishna, although he was a grihastha businessman, but Krishna took everything away. And Prabhupada was thinking, why? And he was reading. And then he read this verse, Yasyaham anugranami harisye tad dhanam shanai. Slowly, shanai shanai, dhanam, I take away hari. Hari means one who takes away. Interesting. Hari, he takes away your material attachments. Especially, I take away all his wealth. If I like him, I do that. If I don't like him, I let him go on in illusion. If I like him, then I make it so that he's forced to surrender to me. And Prabhupada said that. And even in his older, when he was very ill, Prabhupada stopped eating and sleeping. And he said, I was never attracted to austerity because he is a Nitya Siddha Shakti Avesh avatar. He came here. He does not need to practice rigid austerities. In general, devotees don't need to practice heavy austerities like Vrikasura. You know the story of Vrikasura. He wanted some benediction that he could touch anyone's head and the head would crack. So he started worshiping Shiva by cutting with an axe flesh from his body and throwing it in the fire. Well, we're going to have a yajna here on the 23rd, but nobody's going to have to cut your flesh and throw it in, you know, Bhagavad Gita Svaha, you know, cut off your... you don't have to do that. You just have to chant Hare Krishna, take prasadam, and give away Bhagavad Gita. It's nothing too austere. So, the only thing is that you have to demonstrate that you want Krishna more. And that is a constant test, and don't think it'll go away. And in fact, every time you stand up against Maya, every time Yudhyasva Vigata Jvara, every time you stand and fight, you'll get strength. You'll feel very good. You'll feel the material world cannot disturb me. You'll start to understand Aham Brahmasmi. It won't be just a nice theory. But you'll feel it in your very self, in your bones. You'll feel, you know? You'll feel it. And you'll live and you'll see. And worry, disturbance, fear, they will recede. They will, you'll be able to tolerate everything. So, I wanted to read something today about living in America. Okay. 75% of adults, or 74%, say they are concerned about the moral condition of the nation. In fact, there's even talk now that prayer in public schools may come back. Because people are seeing that things have gotten out of control in the schools. Starts off in the schools. Who can imagine, you know, metal detectors? Because kids bring in guns, knives, and bombs, and who knows what. Box cutters and, you know, everything. The reference to box cutters was pointed. That's what the terrorists took on the plane. They didn't have knives or anything. Box cutters. Anyway. That point of view, 75% are concerned about the moral condition of the nation. That point of view was only slightly more among people who associate with the Christian faith than among those who affiliate with other faiths or who have no faith involvement. So practically the whole country is concerned whether you're theist or atheist, people are seeing a breakdown in our moral standards. You know, the ethic is do unto others before they do it to you. There's a breakdown. When asked the basis on which they form their moral choices, nearly half of all adults, about 45%, cited their desire to do whatever will bring them the most pleasing or satisfying results. So that's their sense of morality. If it feels good, do it. Almost 50%, 45% of adults feel that they will base their morals on whether or not it's pleasing to them. How did we come to that state of consciousness where people are totally indifferent to the fact of who they may be affecting adversely? There was a United Nations survey done. The survey was on what people thought about the food shortage in the rest of the world. So they sent out their people to different countries, the UN, United Nations, WHO, World Health Organization. So the question was, please, could you give us your opinion about the food shortage in the rest of the world? The survey was a flop, because people couldn't, various aspects of it, people couldn't understand, so they couldn't, you know, comment. In Africa, people were bewildered. What is this food shortage? Because they hadn't seen much food at all, so they couldn't comment. In Western Europe, they couldn't comment because they didn't know what shortage meant. In Eastern Europe, they didn't know what opinion meant. And in India, people didn't understand what please meant. In America, they didn't know what was meant by rest of the world. So we're kind of in an illusion here. At the time of the World Trade Center disaster, there was a cartoon in the newspaper in India, or actually it was there was a cartoon at the time India exploded a nuclear device, and it had all these very well-to-do looking people, five or eight of them or something, smoking and looking very svelte, and one Indian fellow comes to them and he wants to join their club, and they're commenting that, just look at the kind of people who are trying to join our club these days. In other words, the club of people who have nuclear weapons, and they're looking down at the others. So now the cartoon is, welcome to the club of terrorism. In other words, the rest of the world has been experiencing terrorism for a long time. And we look at it in a different way. We think it's human rights and this and that. There are problems in that area, but still, we've been pretty much sheltered in America for a long time. And we base our morals on, not on sensitivity to others, we base our morals on our own desires for sense gratification, and that won't work in the world because we're all connected. Brown, black, white, yellow, we're all connected in this world. Everything we do is going to influence someone else somewhere. Like people eat McDonald's. Now I'm going down to Brazil, And we are right near the rainforest there. And so much is there in that rainforest by way of drugs, natural herbs that can cure people, species of life. So many species of life go out of existence, become extinct practically every day. What causes that? Because people like big chains like McDonald's, they destroy the rainforest for producing their hamburgers, and people eat those hamburgers, and then they give a donation for saving the rainforest, but they don't see the connection. You know, they don't see the connection. Everything is connected. Now, who produced Osama bin Laden? I mean, Osama, we say Osama, Osama. They say Osama bin Laden. But who produced him? The Americans did. The CIA did. When they were fighting the Russians, they propped bin Laden up. Gave him money, guns, everything. Then he turns back on them. And, oh, this guy's terrible, you know, kill him. Well, okay. He is a little mad, but why is he able to attract people around the world? Because there are the haves and the have-nots. There need not be this situation, but it is so. There's plenty on the world for everybody to have enough. But approximately 60% of 70% of the world's wealth is right here in America. The top six men of the world control about 80% of the world's money are in America. So, what creates the conflict? Satisfying results, that's our morality. Roughly 1/6 of adult public, 17%, bases its moral decisions on what they believe will make other people happy or minimize interpersonal conflict. So, 1/6 of the people. And the same percentage, 1/6, credits the values they were taught by their family as the dominant influence on their moral considerations. About 1 out of 4 adults, 24%, lean primarily upon religious principles and teaching or Bible content when making moral decisions. While many religious leaders propose that the Bible should be the basis of people's morality, the survey showed that only 4 out of every 10 born-again adults relies upon the Bible or church teachings as their primary source of guidance. The percentage who identify the Bible or religious teaching as their dominant moral influence is noticeably lower among Catholics, 16%, and attenders, those who attend mainline Protestant churches, 25%. So even a very small percentage, maybe 20%, 4 out of 10, that's 40%. But still, that's a small percentage in terms of if you're a born-again Christian or a devout religious person, your decisions should be based on Shastra, Scripture, and the Pope or the preacher who's giving you the teaching, Shastra, Chakshus. But people think that I can worship God but not follow His instructions. I don't know where they get these ideas from. Now, Prabhupada, there was a famous philosopher named Hegel. Anybody heard of Hegel? Huh? Who is Hegel? Anybody knows? Nobody. Anyways, huh? Huh?
German?
Yeah, German. He was a German. Hegel, it's a German name. He was a German philosopher. But He was around the same time as Nietzsche and Kant and Engels and Schopenhauer and all those people. You know Hegel, right? Who was he? Okay. Anyway, this is a book that Prabhupada, that was written, or conversations that Prabhupada had with Shyamasundar. But what about the idea that God is evil? Prabhupada, he is evil also. He has got his evil also. Devotee, but not according to our understanding. Prabhupada, yes. But because he is absolute, either he is evil or good, he is God. That is absolute. You cannot say God is evil, indistinct, and now therefore he is evil. No, he is good. What about the idea that God does not exist? Prabhupada, yes, he does not exist in the rascal. That's a fact. The rascal cannot understand what is God, therefore in him he does not exist. So you can say God does not exist, so in your mind he doesn't exist. But it doesn't mean anything. Kirtanananda, he is covered by the curtain of Maya. Prabhupada, yes. Devotee, indistinct, I am God. Prabhupada, that is also a fact, because you are part and parcel of God. Gold is gold. Gold particle is also gold. If you say, I am God, that means if you are particle of gold, you can say, I am gold. Just like you can say, I am American, and President Nixon can also say, I am American. Does that mean you are President Nixon? Shyamasundar, what if I think I am President Nixon? I can conceive. Prabhupada, yes, yes, you can hold the post of President Nixon somehow, somebody. Shyamasundar, let us say, I am now President of the United States. Prabhupada, that is madness. Laughter. You can say, I am President Nixon, this will be taken, you are, President Nixon as American, because he is also American. So you are also American, and that way you can say, I am President Nixon, in the American understanding. So, devotee, so that madness is coming from the spiritual world? Prabhupada, that is not madness. You can say like that, that I am. It is not clearly said. You can say, I am as good as President Nixon, as American. That is the explanation. Shyamasundar, anyway, whatever I can conceive must exist. Prabhupada. Whatever you can conceive of, it must exist. If you're thinking it, therefore I'm thinking that I am eternal. It must be a fact, because where did the thought come from? The desire to live eternally. Nobody wants to die because it is a fact. We are eternal. So he says that this absolute consciousness, or the idea in and for itself, manifests itself in three forms. This is Hegel, Shyamasundar is talking about. The first was the subjective mind. This is the individual who creates abstractions, and he, Prabhupada, subjective mind. Just like, although I have never heard what is God, but I can think within my mind that as there is every man, there is some controller, some chief man. So all this creation, as I have seen, there must be a controller. This is thinking, right way. Shyamasundar, subjectively, Prabhupada, yes. Shyamasundar, he says the subjective mind manifests itself again in three ways. First, so, Prabhupada, so that three ways, impersonal, localized, and personal. Shyamasundar, in a way, first I understand that I relate to this body. Somehow, then I get some understanding of outside objects. Then I get intelligence, real and moral choice. Prabhupada, yes, these things are there. These things are there. Supposing the animal, he is thinking that he's body, but when he comes to the human form of body, he thinks, am I really the body? Then he thinks, no, I am not this body. It is my body. Advanced thinking. Then, what I am. This is progression. Shyam Sundar. Then he says that this absolute idea, the in and for self, is itself in the objective mind, such as our laws, our ideas of morality, our social ethics. In other words, the individual consciousness manifests itself as group consciousness. And as we have laws that govern the state, these are extensions of our own. Prabhupada, as soon as we accept a controller, all these things will come. The laws must come. The control must come. The morality must come. Immorality, everything will come as soon as we accept a controller. The atheistic persons do not accept the controller. They do everything nonsense, immoral. Shyam Sundar, he says that the free will develops in these three areas of experience of law, morality, and social ethics. Prabhupada, that's nice. That is the field of free will activities. Unless you have got platform to execute your life, there is no meaning of free will, so that is the platform. There must be law, there must be system, morality. Just like Arjuna was advised by Krishna. Now whatever you like, yatechasi, yatatakuru, whatever you like, Krishna's telling Arjuna. Now you do so, after the 10th chapter, Krishna tells Arjuna, I've told you everything, now your free will, you do as you like. That is free will. But he has explained to him, this is this, this is this. Now it is you who have your choice. Shyam Sundar, here's where he may differ from you. He says that morality is where the will evaluates itself and sets its own standards. Prabhupada, no, our morality is not like that. We accept morality from higher authorities. Our morality is standardized. Just like Krishna says, Sarva Dharman Paritya Jamami Kam Sharanam Braja. We accept that is morality. Shyam Sundar. Just like the state of California's morality may change. It may say gambling is legal tomorrow and then drinking is not legal. Prabhupada. Because that law is imperfect, but God's law cannot be imperfect. That's perfect. Therefore, we don't take others' advice. That is imperfect. We take God's advice because that is perfect, or God's representative's advice. That is perfect. Shyam Sundar. Then he says that the idea in and for itself expresses itself as the Absolute Spirit. Prabhupada, that means he is speaking the imperfect perfect. He's speaking from material platform. He has no spiritual platform. Shyam Sundar, he says, the subjective mind deals with inner experience. The objective mind deals with outer experience. But the absolute mind deals with both. It unites them. Prabhupada, yes, that is absolute. That we can accept. Shyam Sundar, and that, this absolute expresses itself in three forms again. Art, religion, and philosophy. On the first level, the Absolute assumes a sensuous form, which we call beauty. And this is art, that spirit. Prabhupada. So our definition of God is he is all beautiful. So, Shyam Sundar, so he is all art, artful too, artistic? Prabhupada, yes. So all beautiful means it includes everything. Everything beautiful. Anyway, the point here is a brilliant man like Hegel, a good thinker, but without any guidance from Krishna, he's simply engaging in speculation. And it will not, no one's heard of Hegel, right? No one's heard of him. Although in his time he was a very prominent person. But his philosophy never amounted to anything. But we are taking information from the perfect person, from Krishna, Avaroha Pantha, descending knowledge. Now, in some ways, I don't want to get too much into it because it's controversial, but in some ways, the Afghan state under the Taliban We have a farm in near New Orleans. Huh? Yeah, New Taliban. They had to take their sign down because it sounded too much like New Taliban. But anyway, under the Taliban, there was very little crime. There was this, that, you know, the cinemas were shut down. But they had no real understanding of compassion or philosophy or whatever. They just tortured people, basically. They had some good ideas, but without the proper maturity, without philosophy, they simply created havoc. But there is a need to guide ourselves, at least. If we can't be the leaders of all society, at least we can set an example, because this will lead us in the direction we want to go. This will lead us in spiritual life to achieve the kingdom of God, where the buildings there are made of Chintamani. They don't come tumbling down. They're made of touchstone. Everything is beautiful, and Krishna is everywhere. And if we want to be successful and happy and tolerate the miseries of material existence and go back to Godhead, we must come more in line with Krishna's teaching. And you can't, you're coming here to get, hear Krishna Katha. But if you're not applying even 5% or 10%, if you're not chanting japa, how many people here are chanting japa every day? Okay, not bad. Pretty good. If you should have some kind of sadhana, daily morning activities, Brahma Muhurta. You should have some kind of connection with Radha Govinda. You should be doing some service. How many people are doing weekly service for Radha Govinda? Not the brahmacharis. You see? Oh, okay. Few of you. I saw the other day one devotee, Adidev. Where are you? Cooking for the Sunday feast. Huh? Oh, he's downstairs working, cooking. He and his sister coming every week doing nice service. And you're also doing nice service for the Sunday. You should have some connection with Radha Govinda. Otherwise, you know, you're not going to understand these things very well, moral standards. Your morality should come from within, guided by Krishna. There should be no question in your mind. Integrity, honesty, simplicity, purity, cleanliness, eating only Krishna prasad. So many things should be very natural. It shouldn't be a problem or a botheration for you. It should come from within, but it will only come from your heart when you're connected through devotional service. Oh, this Sunday feast, this kirtan, this lecture, the whole purpose of it is to give you the inspiration to do devotional service. And therefore, I hope that all of you are making progress in that line. I have many, many opportunities to go to many places for the Sunday program. Here in New York, I had someone call me in New Jersey, someone warned me in Long Island, someone even in Philadelphia, please come here. Someone was Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, asked me to go to Gita Nagari. I said, no, I'm going to be in New York because I have a relationship with the congregation here. And I really enjoy being here, but I will enjoy a lot more when I see all of you taking more practical part in serving Radha Govinda. Are there any questions or comments? Yes.
You were talking earlier about like when people have something actually real for them. What's the proper way to? Should we try to engage those people in any way, any sort of thing, when they come up against them? Or should we just completely?
Okay. He's talking about Hegel. Mr. Hegel mentioned that you can conceive of anything and that's reality for you. That sort of the idea. And you meet people like that who have no real absolute understanding. Truth is what you think it is or what you perceive it to be. And how can we talk to these people? How can we engage them? What is our approach? Well, of course, certainly if you can defeat them philosophically, but generally people are not very philosophical. They have very little understanding in logic and argument, etc., so to defeat them is a real problem. Generally, people, again, they base their decisions on what feels good. That in the survey, they determined that. And this was an accurate survey by a very big organization. And their conclusion was that many, many Americans, 75%, base their moral decisions on whether, no, it was 45%, on whether or not it feels good, it gives them a good feeling. So those type of people, it's really hard to talk philosophy with. They have no anchor, no foundation. But you could tell them, you could juggle words with them. You have a conception of reality, but my conception is that your conception is bogus. So how do you deal with that? Am I right or are you right? But, you know, it becomes a game where they try to say something more far out, something more weird, and then you try to say something more entangled. It doesn't lead anywhere. It's like the story of the two Brahmins and the tall fruit, the fruit that fell from the tree and the bird that flew away, and the Brahmins began arguing why the fruit fell, and one had one opinion and one had another opinion. It was the wind that knocked the fruit, scared the bird, and he flew away. No, it was the bird who flew away, and while jumping off the tree, he kicked the branch and the fruit fell down. And then the devotee came along and saw the fruit, cut it up, offered it to Krishna, distributed prasadam, had a Sunday feast, and, you know, practical, very practical. Kaka, tali, anyaya. You see all these people raising up different philosophies now. You know, the nitwit philosophy. They have a center over in Manhattan, nitwit acharya. I call it nitwit. They call it Ritvik, but it's actually nitwit. Nitwit philosophy. This philosophy, that one. There's so many different people coming, criticizing. What are they doing? How many books are they distributing? How many devotees? How many college programs? How much food for life are they? Where's the practical benefit in just, you know, going through the books and extracting at random anything you like, putting it together, making a kichuri, and you know, saying this is our philosophy. So you quote from here, quote from there. Anybody can do that. They're called folio junkies. You know, there's a search program in Prabhupada's books. It's a computer program, and you type in one word, karma, and it tells you all the places in Prabhupada's books and lectures, everything, where the word karma comes. So they get their folio, and they pull out all these quotes, and then You know, make a pizza and goulash, khichdi. But I want to see practically, where is their sadhana, where is their book distribution? We know that was pleasing to Prabhupada. He said it's keeping me alive, it gives me life. Krishna says, Nachatasman manusyeshu kaschin me priyakrita maha. So many devotees right here in this temple. I could immediately stand up 20 or 30 devotees who would say, I became a devotee because I got a book and I read it and it was brilliant and I had no choice, I had to come. I could immediately, no problem. How many people here became devotees because they got one of Prabhupada's books and it profoundly affected them? Okay, you got at least 15, 20 people right here. And their stories are amazing. So, that's what's pleasing. So we have to give up all the nonsense and get down to business. I told this story before, it was so profound. Mayor of Washington, his name was Marion Barry. So he was the mayor for many years, and he got busted for selling drugs. So then he did 4 years in jail for selling drugs. He was a pusher. Then he got out of jail and he ran for mayor again. And he was elected. So at the press conference, Mayor Marion Barry said, I understand some of the people here in Washington are disturbed by the fact that I've been elected. Now, Marion Barry was not only an astute politician, but he was a master of understatement. Because there were a lot of people who were really disturbed. But then he said, well, I've got some advice for you. So then all the cameras stopped clicking. It was pin drop silence. And he leaned forward on his podium and he said, just get over it. It was the most flippant thing he could have said, and people freaked out. The press people went bonkers. But he was true. I mean, he was right. So the real thing is get over it and get on with it. We've made mistakes, we've had problems, but now we're gaining our momentum again. We have such a wonderful message to give to the world. Hey, in your own practice of devotional service, it really, really helps to be peaceful in your mind. Really, really helps. If your mind is distressed and turbulent, even in my own church, there's problems, this, that, it's not going to help. Try to do something about it in a positive way, but get on with your real business, devotion to Radha Govinda, devotional service. Granthraj, Srimad, Bhagavad Gita.